for making it happen for all of us.
Thank you.
I know last time we got together, so the topic that we spoke about was trying to find stability in our life when things are kind of crazy. I just have to shut something that's beeping in the background here. Okay. And we spoke about trying to cling to those things that that are steady when life seems to be totally out of control. And it's been a while since we learned together less, for some of us. I think we're all trying to figure out how to adjust to this new normal, which is not so normal at all. And on the one hand, we do adjust. With the passage of time, we figure out how to navigate this. But at the same time, there's a feeling that we're very, very limited. That's the word I keep thinking about, limited. We're just not able to do the things that we need to do or want to do. And there's so many question marks about the things that make up our life. And it makes us feel very, very small at times. That we're not able to go to school in the normal way. We're not able to pursue that summer internship in the normal way. We're not able to continue dating or to start dating in the normal way. And there's this feeling that's very deflating in all of that. There's this feeling that the frustration of just not being able to spread my wings, so to speak, and to be able to live the life that I want to live. But we say in Musaf, and it's a phrase that I think about on Shabbos, but especially now, there's a term we use in our davening on Musaf. We ask Hashem that halavai, we should be zochet to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and we should find our place in Eretz Yisrael. And the expression that we use in the tefillah is vatita'inu bigvuleinu. Vatita'inu bigvuleinu literally means we should be planted in our gvul, in our territory, in our properties. We should come back within our boundaries, within our borders, to live within the Jewish land. And again, if you're living in Eretz Yisrael, it's a different expression that you're trying to express with vatita'inu bigvuleinu. But I think where we're holding now, in quarantine, I think the way to translate vatita'inu bigvuleinu is that we ask Hashem, help me to flourish, vatita'inu, like you look out the window and you see a tree starting to blossom in the springtime. So we're davening Hashem, vatita'inu bigvuleinu, help me to flower, help me to blossom, help me to grow, vatita'inu, like a tree that's growing. Allow me to grow when I'm bigvuleinu, when I feel trapped within my boundaries, when I feel stuck in my quarantine. And that's something that's very, very difficult, but it's possible to do. And I want to talk about ways that we can, just a few little ways that we can try to feel a little bit big, to feel that we're growing, even when we're trapped, so to speak, indoors, and we're laying low, and life is very much on hold. Let's start with more or less the theme that we spoke about last time. Again, that relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a constant in our life, but it's evolving. It obviously evolves. It's a different feeling being close to Hashem now than maybe it felt 3 weeks ago or a month ago or 6 months ago. I got an email from a dear friend of mine from Shul, and he wrote the following. He said that a former colleague who knows me very well texted me the other day. How has this situation affected your faith? He knows that he's a firm guy. He knows he's a religious person. So this non-Jewish coworker texted him. He said, how has the situation affected your faith? Strengthened? Weakened? About the same? My response, focused, intensified, and strengthened, each one a chapter into itself. And that's certainly a feeling that we all relate to. How has our emunah evolved through this experience? Deeper, weaker, stronger, more focused, less focused, more distracted? It's an evolving story. The story of our relationship with Hashem is an evolving one. On the one hand, I hear from people that they feel more confused now than ever. Maybe the weirdest, strangest feeling, both in terms of self-assessment and in terms of the relationship with God, it's weirder than it's ever been. And other people feel mamish the opposite. That they feel that they're recognizing the Yad Hashem in their life, maybe more clearly now than ever before in their life. This past week, we began Chumash Vayikra. And the opening word, literally the first word of the Chumash, is Vayikra. But there's something unique about that word. There's something very special about that word. If you look at the word Vayikra, it's spelled, the way it's written in the Torah and printed in our Chumashim, is with a small Aleph. Vav Yud Kuf Resh, and then a very, very small Aleph. And much has been written to try to make sense of that little Aleph. So if you look in the writings of the Divrei Yisrael, the Majitzer Rebbe, the holy Majitzer Rebbe, the first Majitzer Rebbe, who passed away in 1920, I have the sefer here, Divrei Yisrael, he writes an amazing thing. He says, if you want to understand the Aleph of Chumash Vayikra, the Sefer that we've just entered into, you need to connect it to the last pasuk of Chumash Shmos. Shmos is called by the Ramban the book of Galus and Geula. It's the book of exile and redemption. And if you want to understand the Vayikra, the call that Hashem is giving us now, you have to understand the last pasuk in Sefer Shmos. What is the last pasuk, or what is the last phrase, really, in Sefer Shmos? Well, I'll read you the whole pasuk. The pasuk goes like this. Ki anan Hashem ala mishkan yomam, ve'esh tia laila bo. The cloud of Hashem hovered over the Mishkan by day, and a fire, a pillar of fire by night. Le'enei kol beis Yisrael b'chol mas'ehem. Before the eyes of the entire Jewish people, b'chol mas'ehem, in all of their travels. The cloud, the fire, when it moved, Klal Yisrael moved with it. That's how Chumash Shmos, that's how Parshas Pekudei ends. What does it have to do with the small aleph? What's the smichas aparshas? What's the connection between the end of Shmos and the very first word of Chumash Vayikra? Says the Holy Majid Sarabi, listen to his words, they're beautiful. Ki kol ha-mikrim sheba'olam ha-kol hu ba-hashkacha pratis min ha-shamayim. My friends, one of the ways that we can feel really big in a time when we feel really limited and really small is by realizing the precise, the hashkacha pratis. Pratis means the details. The precise way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is communicating with us. The vayikra, the way that Hashem is calling to us. That in the smallest details of your life, there's a hashkacha pratis min ha-shamayim, kenod b'shem tzaddikim, as all the great tzaddikim have explained. Afilu kash sheharuach mefazra mimakom lemakom. That even a piece of straw, a twig, a leaf that blows from one place to another place, as we say every morning as part of our Psukei Dezimra, you'll recognize the pasuk from Tehillim Kuf Mem Ches. Even a leaf that's blowing in the wind, a piece of straw or stubble that's blowing outside. Haruach sa'ara osa devaro. Recognize the phrase? It's in Tehillim Kuf Mem Ches, in the Ha'alukas. Ruach sa'ara osa devaro. That even a strong wind is doing the will of the Creator. Vahu b'hashkocha min ha-shamayim. Shemikodem ha-yitzarach liyos b'makom zeh. Va'achshav b'makom zeh. Originally, Hashem wanted that stick to be in point A, and Hashem wanted it to then be moved to place B. HaKadosh Baruch Hu moves something b'hashkacha pratis, a leaf blowing in the wind. I want to pause here on the words of the Divrei Yisrael just for a moment and share with you my favorite Pesach story. Yes, Yaakov. We play soccer now. Soon we can play soccer, very soon. Okay, can you get started with Mommy? I'll be there in a few minutes. Okay, time out, friends. This is real life. Okay, sorry, friends. Okay, thank you for your patience. No, I have to be a daddy, much more than I need to be a rabbi. Okay, so the wind is blowing, yeah? When the wind blows a piece of straw from point A to point B, so that's all part of the master plan. So here's my favorite Pesach story, literally my favorite Pesach story, I think. If you have a better one, send it to me, I want to hear it. But I can't read this line from the Majid Sarebi about the wind blowing from point A to point B without thinking for a second about this story. There was a Yid at the end of the Holocaust. His name was Yudel Zigelman. And this Yudel Zigelman and his friend had survived the war. And they were broken people, like everyone who survived, broken in different ways. He had lost his family. He had lost so much of his life was taken away from him. And he was freed from a concentration camp. And it was about a month before Pesach. Now you have to understand, the fact that he was out of a concentration camp didn't really mean that his life was restored to him, not at all. Both not in terms of his ability to go back to his old life. He had lost so many relatives during the war. If you could just mute your phone or your computer, thank you so much. He had lost everything. He had mamish lost everything. And there was nowhere to go. There was nowhere safe to go. There were still Nazis roaming the streets. It was very, very unclear what he was going to be able to do to survive. And he found a friendly non-Jew who took him into his barn and allowed him to stay there, this Yudel Zigelman and this friend. It was a couple of weeks before Pesach, and as Pesach approached, he was trying to figure out, what type of Pesach am I going to have? What is the chayrus of Pesach going to look like? If you could just mute your phone, I think it's someone named Avigail. If you can hear me and you can just mute your screen. Thank you so much. I'm sorry. So he's trying to figure out what to do. So he says to the farmer one day, he says, listen, you know, I have a holiday coming up and I need some flour. I know it's a lot to ask. I know you're not a wealthy person, but if you could just get me a little bit of flour, I'll be able to make this matzah that I need for Pesach. So the farmer says, I'll see what I can do. And he comes back a few days later. He knocks on the barn door. And as opposed to giving him his usual rations of a couple potato peels or a half an egg or something like that, he has from this little pouch of flour. And he gives it to this Yudel Zigelman, and he's so happy, so excited. He's going to be able to make matzah for Pesach. He says to his friend, he says, Maror, I think Hashem knows we've had plenty of maror, but we'll figure something out for the bitter herbs. And then he starts thinking, he says, but what about wine? Kosher wine, that's not happening. There's no way we're going to get kosher wine for Pesach. Okay, no, we'll make the most of it. So they bake their little matzahs, they take some sticks and some fire, and they make a little matzah. And it's mamish right before Pesach, and all of a sudden this friend and he realize, hold on a second. We don't have wine for Pesach. We don't even know how do you make a Seder without wine? Baruch Hashem, I hope that none of us have ever experienced that. We've probably never experienced that. But what do you do? Kadesh, Orchatz, how do you do Kadesh without wine? And they started thinking to themselves, Ribbono Shel Olam, here we are. We have a little bit of matzah. We found some bitter herbs for Maror. We don't even know how to make a Seder without wine. And they went to bed feeling very, right before Pesach, the night before Pesach, they were feeling very, very tzabrach and very broken. Here they were trying to taste a little cheros, but so torn apart. They said the next day, Erev Pesach, they get a knock on the barn door, and it's the farmer's son. And he says to them, he says, I brought you guys something. They say, what is it? He says, well, I was out in the field, and it was a windy day, a very windy day, you know, Ruach Sa'ara Osa Devaro, like David HaMelech said, it was a windy day. And I'm standing in the field with the cows, and all of a sudden some papers started to blow through the field, some trash, some papers that looked like were blowing through the field. And I picked up one of the pieces of paper, and I looked at it, and it looked like, I think it's Hebrew writing, I'm not sure, but I thought maybe you'd be interested in it. And he gives them this torn piece of paper. And they look at it, and they can't believe their eyes. Now, just picture for a second where that paper had been. Some Nazi Yamach Shemam probably went into a Jewish home as they were rounding up Jews, taking them to the slaughter. And the Nazis didn't only want to kill Jewish people, they wanted to kill our faith. So they took the Shas, they took the Svarim off the shelf, they threw it to the ground, they ripped up the Shulchan Aruch, they tore it to pieces, they threw it out in the street, they were burning it in the street. And who knows, some of those pages were probably blowing all around throughout the war, blowing in different parts of Europe. And all of a sudden, that afternoon, the farmer found one of these pieces of paper just blowing, happened to be blowing through his field. And he hands it to them, and they can't believe their eyes. It's a page from a torn Shulchan Aruch, and I have the Shulchan Aruch right here. It was chapter Taf Pei Gimel, chapter 483. You know what the heading of this chapter in Shulchan Aruch is? Din mi she'ein lo yayin. How to make a Seder if you don't have wine. And the Shulchan Aruch describes the very unusual process of starting with Hamotzi. Again, the way one would do on a Shabbos, if one didn't have wine, you can make Kiddush over the challah. But you can imagine the surprise, the excitement, that sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was still interested in our lives. Here you had these two broken Jews trying to find their way, trying to taste a little cheiros, the Pesach, of their freedom from the Holocaust, and wondering, Hashem, have you forgotten about us completely? We don't even know how to make a Seder without wine. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'ashkacha pratis, the Ruach Sa'ara Osa Devaro, the wind that operates at the command of Hashem, brought them a little bit of a salvation in those broken moments. Continues the Majid Sarebi, going back to our question, what is the small Aleph of Vayikra, and how does it connect us to the last Pasuk in Chumash Shemos? Says the Majid Sarebi, he quotes from his grandfather. He says, Hashkacha Pratis is so precise that if you have a coat hanging on a peg, attached to a wall, next to a bookshelf, well, it's that coat, on that peg, on that wall, on that bookshelf, every bit of it is b'hashkacha pratis. Sha'afilu tzadei raglav shel adam sipurim b'hashkacha min ha'shamayim. That every footstep you take through this world, my friends, we have an opportunity to really live this Torah and to try to believe it. That every footstep we take through this world is guided with hashkacha min hashamayim. And even he says if you take 10,000 footsteps a day, kol psia upsia, every step you take is counted, is measured by hashkacha pratis min hashamayim. And he takes it one step further. Because we say a bracha in the morning, hamechin mitzadei gavar. Which means that misha eino mamin bezeh, if you don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guiding the mitzadei gavar, the steps of a person through this world, then every single morning you're making a bracha levatala. Because you don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guiding my steps through this world. And he says, all the more so, mikol shekein achshav, bechevelei Mashiach. In these final moments before Mashiach's arrival, all the more so, our footsteps are precise. So says the Majid Rebbe, what's the connection to that last phrase in Parshas Pekudei, le'enei kol beis Yisrael, b'chol ma'aseihem, that the eyes of the Jewish people, the eyes of the Jewish people should be able to see that cloud or that fire guiding them every step of the way, b'chol ma'aseihem, wherever they go and everything that they do. And what's the connection to that little aleph of Vayikra? Says the Majid Rebbe, Vayikra is a lashon of not only calling, but mikra, chance, the occurrences of our life. Aleph, a small aleph. Aleph represents alufo shel olam, the master of the world, the aluf, the king of the world, the chief of the world. And therefore, says the Majid Rebbe, a small aleph is a reminder that in all the vayikras, in all the callings of our life, in all the happenings of our life, there's that little aleph. That little aleph represents that little whisper of a Kadosh Baruch Hu to you. Moral davar katan v'zeir, that even in the smallest things of our life, ratzalomer shakol masher yera v'yikra ba'olam hakol hu mibachinas aleph. That sometimes the aleph looks small, but if you're listening carefully, you can hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu bashkacha pratis, governing the smallest details of your life. And when we realize that, the things that appear so small and so limited in the situation that we currently exist in, we're not that small at all. Feel that embrace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Feel that involvement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Le'enei kol Yisrael b'chol ma'aseihem. The last words of Pekudei, Vayikra. Find that aleph, hear that call. Realize that again, even in the smallest details, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. And daven over it. We have an awesome opportunity to daven now, to feel our davening. In some ways we can be disengaged, we can be disconnected in a serious way. But we can also tune in a very serious way to our own words and to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbeinu Yonah writes in Maseches Brachos that any time we daven, it's an expression of Amunah. In fact, it's the highest expression of Amunah. It's the recognition and realization that there's no one to turn to other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a fulfillment of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the first words we ever heard from Hashem at Har Sinai. The great tzaddik, Rav Nachum Chernobler, one time was found by his student. He was standing in a corner and he was davening, his eyes were closed, and he was tucked under his talis in the corner and he was davening very, very intensely. Rav Nachum was a big tzaddik. The Rebbe of Chernobyl was mamish, a big tzaddik. A person who was every second of his life dveikus v'Hashem, deeply connected to Hashem, involved in the deepest things in the world. And they found him, the chassidim, they found him in a corner, he was under his talis, and the way he was shuckling was like next level, you know, next level tefillah. So they wanted to hear, the Hasidim, the Talmidim, they wanted to hear what was the Rebbe talking to Hashem about. So they snuck over into the corner and they listened in. They tried to listen in under the talis. And they heard the Rebbe saying, Ribbono Shel Olam, there's a woman who comes to the house to help my wife with the cleaning and the cooking and helps to take care of the house. And she told my wife recently that she's thinking about quitting. Ribbono Shel Olam, I need you, please, I'm begging you. She's so helpful. She's so helpful to our family. She's so helpful around the house. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need you to please put it into the mind of that woman that she should change her mind, that she should still want to work for us, that she shouldn't take a job elsewhere, maybe that pays a little better or is more close to her home, is more convenient for her. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please put it into her mind that she shouldn't quit on us. This is what the tzaddik Rav Nachum of Chernobyl was davening so intensely under his talis. And the chassidim, they said, Rebbe, you know, you're a person who's the deepest of the deep. You never separate from Hashem for a second. You're working on the deepest matters of creation, of reality. And this is what you're talking to Hashem about. And Rav Nachum looked at the Talmidim, and he said with such a simplicity, he said, who else should I talk to about this if not a Kadosh Baruch Hu? You think this is a small thing? I mean, only a man could think that that's such a small thing, a lack of appreciation of what it takes to run a home, as many Baruch Hashem, women are much more skilled in that department, although I'm trying to help out a lot these days, folding a lot of laundry, Baruch Hashem. But the Talmidim said, Rebbe, this is the big thing that you're pouring your heart out to a Kadosh Baruch Hu about. And he says, yes. Because if I believe in Hashem, then yes, then the small things of my life are a big deal to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And Rav Nachum Chernobyl said, this is not also Emunah. People think like, wow, you talk to Hashem about the little things of your life. That's also an expression of Emunah. It's not also Emunah. That's the essence of Emunah. To have the humility to realize that there's nothing in my life that I can control without the guiding hand of Baruch Hu, and to recognize that. So yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please put it into the heart and into the mind of this woman who's convinced her that she should want to work for us. And yes, we'll be okay if she quits. Life will go on. But for us, it's important. It might be a small thing on the grand scale of things. But for us, it's an important thing. And therefore, who else should we turn to if not a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Take the small needs of your life right now. And sometimes things that we took for granted have become so important to us. We've come to appreciate them in a different way. So daven over them. Make those small things much bigger from our limited place. Vatita'enu bigvuleinu. Allow us to flourish again in this limited way. I want to share another idea, another way that we could feel big when we're feeling small. One of the challenges of our world, I think that we all face, and we all know very well, is the pace of the world. Now, it's a challenge and it's a bracha. Right? We're used to things happening very, very quickly in our world. We like quick results. We like quick response. When someone sends you a text or an email, right? Or you send one to someone else, you like when they respond quickly. We're used to things being very high speed. We're able to get information very quickly. We're able to order things online and receive them very, very quickly under normal circumstances. But when life gets flipped upside down, it's an opportunity for us to slow down a little bit and to appreciate the bracha of slowing down and to work on a midah that's very much lost in our world today. It's a midah called patience. Being patient. We're all anticipating Mashiach any second now. We're ready to run. We're mamish ready to run back to Eretz Yisrael so quickly. And when we think about Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Jews left very, very quickly. But after Yetzias Mitzrayim, life slowed down a lot. And the Pesach that we experience now is not supposed to be a fast Pesach, but in fact, we're being trained in a slow Pesach. What do I mean by that? Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. The great tzaddik and Kohen of Lublin passed away in the year 1900. Rav Tzadok, in his magnum opus, the Tzidkas HaTzadik, the very, very first piece, Rav Tzadok contrasts the Pesach of old and the Pesach of now. And how every Pesach since Yetzias Mitzrayim is different on a certain level than the original Pesach. He writes in the very first piece of Tzidkas HaTzadik, Os Aleph, Reishis Knisas Ha'odom La'avodas Hashem Tzarech Lios B'chipazon. When a Jew begins Avodas Hashem, when I'm trying to get from one situation to a different situation, and it's the first time I'm getting started, I have to throw myself in fully. I need to do so b'chipazon. I need to rush. When we were leaving Mitzrayim, becoming a people, we had to eat the Karan Pesach very quickly. We had to be ready to become Hashem's people very quickly. V'lo Pesach Doros. But there's no mitzvah to rush now on Pesach. In fact, the Pesach Seder, we take our time. Kol amar b'lesaper hareza meshubach. We tell the story for hours and hours. We're not in any rush at all. All right, maybe tita afikomen by chatzos. But again, the whole process of redemption is much slower. We've been waiting 2,000 years since the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. We don't seem to be having a very quick geula at all. Mipnei shahaschal lenatek atzmo. When a person first wants to uproot oneself from a negative situation, to change tracks, to change paths, to go from an Eved Mitzrayim to being a Yid, to becoming a Jew, we had to act quickly. It had to be done b'chipazon. Because only if we run away from that Yetzirah can we free ourselves. But that's not most of our life. A lot of our life, and again, maybe it's unhelpful that we live in a world where everything is so fast because it's not true to real life experience. Becoming a good Jew is not something you do instantly. It doesn't work like that. Developing a relationship, a real relationship, is not something that can happen in a couple of seconds. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes investment. To become good at something, to acquire a skill, it's not something you can click a few buttons and it arrives at your door. It takes practice, it takes effort. And therefore, says Rav Tzadok, Va'achar kach, after we left Mitzrayim, Shuv yelech b'mesinos ula'at kedin Pesach doros. After we leave Mitzrayim, and we do it now, by the way, after Pesach, we start to enter into a process called Sfiras HaOmer, a gradual process of counting step by step by step, 7 weeks, working our way slowly through that first burst of inspiration that we got on the way out of Mitzrayim. We all want Mashiach to appear very suddenly. And halavai, it should be true. I'll vote for it. If we have a chance to vote for it, we want to rush out of this mess called coronavirus and get back to regular life at the very least, if not a Mashiach dika life. We'd love for it to change like that. And again, I'll vote for it if we're entitled to vote. But our patience is also being tested right now. Because we have to be unbelievably patient right now. People keep asking, everyone wants to know, when is this going to be over? And you know what the answer is? No one knows. No one has a clue. We can keep guessing arbitrary timelines when life's going to be normal again, when I'm going to be able to get back to my regular routine. No one knows. And that's a tremendous test of our patience. People have weddings that are scheduled in a couple months from now, and they're davening that it should be normal, but they don't know. They have no idea. They have no idea if it's going to look like a normal wedding or not. And no one knows. Am I going to get back to school? Am I going to get back to that summer internship? Am I going to get back to life? And all we can do is be patient and daven. And that's the avoda. But being patient is a chashuv thing. Being able, Baruch Hu, if this is running the world, it's making us a lot of uncertainty of, and I can't get the instant results that I'm so used to in so many areas of our high-speed modern world. So then it's an opportunity for us to work on a midah that's lost in the world. And that's called being patient. And when a person is patient, good things come to those who wait. I have to learn with you an unbelievably, it's mamash a prophecy, this piece of Torah. It's from the Eish Kodesh in Parshas Mitzora from the year 1940. The Pia Zetzner Rebbe was the Rav of the Warsaw Ghetto. And we have his Torahs, a small volume called Eish Kodesh, Torahs from 1939 to 1941. And in Parshas Mitzora, which is a Parsha that talks about quarantine, the Pia Zetzner Rebbe writes an unbelievable thing. Parshas Tazria Mitzora talks about Saras, the affliction that is known as Saras, a very, very painful experience, which comes about, according to the Gemara, for seven different shortcomings. It's a spiritual malady. It's not a physical illness. It's not leprosy. It's a spiritual illness. And it says in Parshas Mitzora that the Jewish people are going to come to Eretz Canaan. We're going to come to Eretz Yisrael. Kisavo el Eretz Canaan. Vanasati nega tzaras bebeis Eretz achuzaschem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to bring tzaras on the walls of your home. Now, if you remember Rashi from Parshas Mitzora, it's in Parak Yud Dalet, you can look it up. Rashi says, in fact, tumas tzaras of the home, maybe as opposed to tzaras of my flesh, is actually a big bracha in disguise. Bisorehi lachem, Rashi says, it's actually a good news. It's a prediction. Kisavo al Eretz Kanaan, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to find tzaras on your home. That's good? Yeah, that's good, says Rashi. It's a prediction of something good. Lefi shehit minu amorim matmonios shel zav. Because the Amorim who lived in Eretz Yisrael prior to the Jews' entry into the land hid treasures in the walls of their home. And when you have tzaras, you're going to have to dismantle the stones of your home and you're going to find al yidei hanega noite tzabayis umoitzan. You're going to find those treasures buried in the wall. But says the Pia Zetzner Rebbe, hold on a second, let's read the psukim carefully in Mitzora. How does it actually work? A person sees tzaras on the walls of his home and he comes to the Kohen and the Kohen says, okay, we're going to quarantine your home. We're going to mark your home for the next 7 days. We're going to keep an eye on your home. We're going to monitor the situation. We're going to be hiskir asabayis for 7 days. And at the end of 7 days, if it's tzaras, we'll take apart your house and we'll find the treasure that Rashi is describing here. So he said, my father asked the question, I don't understand. If we know that this is a spiritual bracha that's waiting to be discovered, so why do we need to wait a week? Why do we need to wait those in the walls that Hashem promised? If we know what this is, so just take apart, the second you identify, take apart the house, find the treasure, and celebrate. But says the Eish Kodesh, says the Pia Zetzner Rebbe, that's not how it works. Says the Eish Kodesh, Hinei, bikavanas haTorah mitzvoseh ein lanu asaga. We don't understand the real reason for anything in the Torah, but I'd like to suggest the following to answer this question, he says. Ki yodim u'ma'aminim, we know and we believe. Shekol masha Hashem osa lanu. Afilu kishchas v'shalom melaka osanu. Akol litovahi. We know that everything that Hashem does, even when Hashem afflicts us, it's all for our benefit. Aval, now listen to these words. It's Mamash Nevuah from 1940. And he was talking, obviously, in his context. I'm not comparing his to ours, or ours to his. Aval kishiroim ke'es. But if you look out the window today, if you look at our state today, he was talking about being trapped in the ghetto, being surrounded by the Nazis who would eventually take his life. Aval kishiroam ke'eis shalobi yisurei haguf levad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not only afflicting us today with physical illness, which is very true, unfortunately. But Hashem is doing things that are pushing us away from Him. The schools, the yeshivas are closed. There's no shul to daven in collectively. And the mikvahs are closed. Vikadoma and so many other spiritual things have been taken away from us. Maybe there's a part of us in the back of our mind that starts to say, Hashem, this can't be good. This can't be a bracha in disguise. You want to tell me I have to undergo physical suffering in order to get to a spiritual reward? I get it. But how could spiritual suffering be a reward? How could this be a promise? How could this be something good in disguise? Why would Hashem want to shut down shuls? Why would Hashem want to shut down yeshivas? Why would Hashem want to close mikvos? We start to think that maybe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not doing something good at all right now. If this is Latova, so afflict us, Hashem, with things that don't take away bitul Torah, utfila, v'chas v'shalom, k'ma'at kol Torah. The whole Torah is being challenged right now. Is this not the suffering that's described in Parshas Netzavim, where Hashem is throwing us away because He doesn't like us? So therefore Hashem says, I want you to look at your house. I want you to look at the walls of your Jewish home. I want you to experience that quarantine. And I want you to think that the walls right now, as we're trying to figure out what to do with this home, are tame. Not only are they tame, they transmit tumah to other things. And I want you to be patient. And I want you to wait patiently. And that's why the Kohen himself declares, not that this is Tzaras, but rather, Ki nega nira li babayis. It looks like Tzaras. It doesn't look good. You're right, it doesn't look good. And sometimes you're in a spiritual Tzaras that makes it even harder to understand. Hashem, if you love us, why are you taking away our shuls? Why are you taking away our yeshivas? Why are you making it hard for us to prepare properly for Pesach? But be patient, he says. Be patient, says the Piazetz Rebbe, and after a week of waiting, after acquiring that midah of patience, which is such an important part of being able to experience not the original Pesach, which was fast, 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 but the Pesach Lidoros that unfolds very slowly, once you've acquired that midah of patience, then Hashem says, then and only then, can we take apart your house, and then you'll start to realize that, you know what, that even the suffering which was so hard and so unbearable, and the Piazetz Rebbe is writing in the context of the harshest of suffering in our history, the Holocaust, the suffering at the hands of the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. If you're patient and you just wait it out, and I know we're bursting, we just want Mashiach immediately, but if we could just wait it out, if we could just be a little bit patient with Hashem, and let Hashem run the show the way that He wants to, we'll be able to see that there's treasures, mamish treasures in the walls that are waiting to be discovered. The Bnei Yisasker, the holy Bnei Yisasker's son, the son of Rav Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, Rav David of Dinov, wrote a sefer called Tzemach David. It's not a well-known sefer. It's a small little sefer, but he writes in Parshas Mitzora. He says on these words, when the Kohen says, Kinega nira li babayis, it looks like there's an affliction here because it's not really an affliction. It's a brach in disguise. He says that in Tanakh, there's only one other time we have the phrase nira li. We have it once here in Mitzora, Kinega nira li babayis. And the only other time we have the expression in Tanakh of Nir Ali is in Sefer Yirmiyahu. The Navi Yirmiyah tells us, Me Rachok Hashem Nir Ali. From a distance, God appeared to me. And the Tzemach David, Rav David of Dinov, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, says the connection is an easy one. Because a person who understands Kenega Nir Ali Babayis, that when I'm suffering, when I'm quarantined, when my house is Tomei, from Tzaras, and I'm just waiting for Hashem to take apart those stones and uncover the treasure inside. A person who has that patience will also understand Meirachok, when Hashem appears distance. Meirachok Hashem Nir Ali. Take a look at that pasuk in Yirmiyah, Perek Lamed Aleph. Meirachok Hashem Nir Ali. Then when Hashem looks distant, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really Nir Ali. Hashem is preparing to reveal Himself to us. And my friends, that's an opportunity that we have right now when we're feeling small and we're feeling stuck and we're feeling anxious and we just want to move quickly through this tzara. We should daven, halavai, it should end quickly, but we have to remember, like Rav Tzadik told us, there's Pesach Mitzrayim, which happens suddenly, and there's Pesach Ledoros. There's many other geulas in our life that unfold slowly, and we have to have that midah of patience. But I want to share one final way that we can feel big when we're feeling small. And maybe this is the most important one of all. Because right now, again, as our lives are on hold and we feel like I want to just get back to spreading my wings, like I said at the beginning, and being able to fly through my life, to soar, and to have so many goals and so many things I need to do, and I just can't do them right now. And I feel limited. I feel trapped. I feel small. Let's remind ourselves that we're involved right now, whether you realize it or not, and we need to realize it. We're all involved right now in one of the biggest principles of the entire Torah, which is pikuach nefesh, which is providing for life, is saving the lives, if not ourselves, of others. And many of us are not in direct danger. Many of us maybe could go out and could go about our business, and maybe we would be safe. Maybe we'll say, I'm young and I'm healthy and I don't have anything to worry about. But we're complying with the rules, rightfully so, because we care about life. If not our own, we care about the lives of others. And that's really the biggest thing that you can do in the world. What does it mean to be a big person? What's the definition of a big person? A big person is a person who doesn't live for oneself, but a big person is a person who lives one's life and it's for others as well. And maybe that's what we're doing right now. Whether you're on the front lines, whether you're a hospital worker or a nurse, or you're a Hatzalah member who's mamish putting their life on the line for other people, or whether you're just staying home to keep other people safe, you're osek in the sugya of pikuach nefesh. There's nothing bigger than that. How could you feel small at a time like this? Moshe Rabbeinu walks out of Paro's palace, where he's living the life of an undercover Jew. Vayihi bayamim ahem, in the second parak of Shemos, vayigdal Moshe. Moshe became a gadol. Moshe became big. Vayigdal Moshe. How do you become a gadol? What does it mean to be the gadol hador? Every one of us is the gadol hador right now. You know what it means to be the gadol hador? Vayigdal Moshe. You know how you become big? Vayetze elachav vayar besivlosam. Moshe became big because Moshe went out to his brothers and he saw their suffering. And he cared about them. And he understood that a Jew's life was in danger, and he got involved. For us, maybe the way to get involved is not to strike down that mitzri and bury him in the sand. Maybe the way that we save lives is simply by staying home and being safe and being cautious and being responsible as we prepare for a very unusual Pesach. Maybe you could save someone's life by making a phone call and giving a little word of chizuk to someone. Maybe you can be involved in making a difference in the life of others by something as simple as going shopping to whatever limited degree you're allowed to, and not hoarding food, or not hoarding toilet paper, as unfortunately some people are doing. I was thinking this week, I was talking to one of my friends and rabbinic colleagues, and he was asking me something, and it reminded me of a story about toilet paper. I know that's a funny thing to talk about, but in the world that we're living right now, a person who decides to buy less paper towel or toilet paper can make a difference in someone else's life. So I want to tell you a story about toilet paper and how it changed someone's life forever. I'm so happy I remembered this story. It's in Rav Zilberstein's Aleinu L'Shabeach, the Bamidbar volume, in the Hakdama. It's an amazing little story. He tells a story about a person who was Chozer B'Tshuva in Petach Tikva, and he shared the following story. He said, how did I become from? What changed my life forever? He said it was an encounter that I never expected to have with a tzaddik named Rav Eliyahu Dushnitzer, Zatzal. Maybe you never heard of Rav Eliyahu. Rav Eliyahu Dushnitzer was a Talmud very close to the Chafetz Chaim. When he passed away in 1949, the Chazon Ish, who attended his funeral, said, I can assure everyone here that he's one of the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim. He was a very, very special soul. Rav Eliyahu Dushnitzer was involved in the Lumji Yeshiva for, I don't know, decades, 25 years or so. So this Jew, who was Chozer B'Tshuva in Petach Tikva, the Lumji Yeshiva was in Petach Tikva in its later years, he said, I'll tell you what happened. He said it was an Erev Yom Kippurim. And I was walking outside, and a lot of people in the neighborhood were walking to Kol Nidre. I was completely irreligious. I was not interested in anything that had to do with Yom Kippur. And as I was walking past the Lumji Yeshiva in Petach Tikva, I noticed that outside the shul, outside the yeshiva, they had set up, expecting a large crowd around the holidays, they had set up these portable restrooms. They had set up these bathrooms to allow for the large crowd to be able to use the bathroom. And he said, and I was shocked to see, as I was walking past these outhouses, these porter potties outside the Lumji Yeshiva, I was shocked to see, moments before entering into that world of Yom Kippur, I was totally uninterested. But I saw a Jew. I saw a Jew with a long white beard, and he was going in and out of each of the stalls, each of the bathrooms. And I couldn't imagine what this holy-looking person, this righteous-looking person was doing. So I went over to him and I asked him what he's doing. And he told me, he said, you know, there's a lot of people who are expected over the next 25 hours in the yeshiva. And I wanted to make sure that there's enough toilet paper in each of the bathrooms for anyone who might need to use the bathroom. And he said, I'm sitting here, I'm ripping up toilet paper to make sure that there's properly prepared toilet paper for Yontiv, for the guests who are going to be davening in this yeshiva, davening in this shul. And the fellow writes here, and it's printed here again in the Hakdama to the Aleinu L'Shabeach on Bamidbar, Kol Kriyas Nir Shel HaRav Ahu, I didn't know who this rabbi was at the time, but with every tear of the toilet paper, Kara Lias Halev, it tore my heart. Va'amarti, and I said to myself, if this is what one of the leaders of the yeshiva is thinking about, ripping up toilet paper to provide for someone else in the moments before the holiest day of the Jewish calendar year, then I want to be a Jew. It might seem like a small thing, some of the things that we're doing today, but you never know how it could save someone's life. It could save someone spiritually, it could change someone's life physically. And therefore we have to feel big in these days when it's so easy for us to feel small. I want to leave you with the words of Rav Shlomo Freifeld, directly out of his mouth. Rav Shlomo Freifeld, the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Shar Yashuv in Far Rockaway, a tzaddik who left this world also at an age that was simply too young. And these are his words, directly transcribed from a drasha that he once gave. He said, and I conclude with this, every time I get to this medrash, I say this is such a breath of fresh air. You'll hear what medrash he's talking about. Let's learn through it again. The medrash says that the Rabbono Sha'olam tests a tzaddik in the small areas, and if he passes, then he can be a leader of Jews. The medrash brings a proof from the fact that both Moshe Rabbeinu and David HaMelech were both tested by sheep. Moshe Rabbeinu ran after a stray sheep in the desert. Once he found it, he understood that it was tired and had only run away to find water. The Medrash tells us he picked up the sheep and carried it back on his shoulders. David used to give the youngest sheep, the one with the weakest teeth, the first bite of grass, because the grass was softest. Then he would give the older sheep, whose teeth were a little stronger, the middle part of the grass, and it was harder for them to chew. He saved the toughest grass for the middle-aged goats and let them out only at the end to chew from the bottom. He related to the needs of the little sheep. You know, we throw around the word gadol. What's a gadol, said Rav Freifeld. Our view is vertical. We think a gadol is someone who knows kodshim, nashim, moed. He knows a lot of Torah. He can't be touched. That's a normal way to think. But what we are told here in this medrash describing Moshe Rabbeinu and David HaMelech taking care of the little sheep, what we are told here is that he has to be horizontal. That a gadol is a person that in every nook and cranny of his life, he has to be a gadol, even in the smallest things. And if he can't do it, Hashem says, I'm not interested. You can't be a leader of Jewish people. Of course, he has to be a huge Talmud Chacham as well. But if the horizontal part of him is missing, and he can't relate to everyone and everything, then that's not a true gadol. My friends, we may not think of ourselves as gadolei Yisrael. And again, we feel very limited and small right now. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the opportunity to be really big Jews right now. So let's try to hold on to some of these ideas today. Let's try to be patient with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's be big in the midah of patience. Let's be big in our emunah to realize that the smallest aleph of our life has awesome hashkacha pratis. And let's be big people to think about others and to realize that the smallest choices that we're making right now could be the difference between someone's life and death, either physically or spiritually. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see that we're big people. We'll come to this Shabbos, the Shabbos HaGadol, as it's called historically. And it'll be the Shabbos that prepares us for that Geula, that halavai, we should be zocha to see this year, Bekarav Mamish. Thank you all very, very much for tuning in to learn. And stay safe, take care of yourselves. Thank you, Mrs. Cement, so much. And Mirza Hashem, we should continue to learn together and strengthen one another.
Thank you.